Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to show you how to reduce your risk of breast cancer by eating two types of food. This is the University of Buffalo and the University of Puerto Rico. A good study that's very promising, very positive. I'm going to share the insights. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nutrition and Cancer, and it's so simple. It's so easy. We should all be doing this, because if something can reduce the risk of breast cancer in women, why not other forms of cancer in men and women? So that's the beginning of our show. Then I have a commentary. I'm going to do a commentary today, part one, but part two more in-depth and philosophical tomorrow. Part one, it's a commentary to engage you in giving a call to us at 888-874-4888. And I'd like to hear your response. Tomorrow I'll give you my response. Two different commentaries, one philosophical and historical tomorrow, one pragmatic and practical today. And you'll hear that in about 15 minutes. Also, a commentary from John Whitehead, one of America's leading constitutional lawyers. He really is on all of our sides. He sees the danger in the government's overreach. He's gone up against the major governmental agencies. He was the head of trying to stop asset forfeiture. So he talks about the mile markers of tyranny, losing our freedoms on the road from 9/11 to COVID-19. Also today, we're going to be taking a look at some other issues, including, I don't know how long it'll be, but at least one, hopefully two, of your calls on our talkback line. So we'll go to that. And then two voices. I'm featuring today voices in the media, courageous voices, in Australia speaking out in a country that is loaded with all types of fascistic rules and laws. And then we're going to talk about new and good information on, well, what can help you prevent COVID-19 if you're susceptible. Not everyone is. And if you are one of the healthcare workers, why you should have this at all times in your medicine cabinet. And if you are sick, take this within the first 7 days. There's brand new information out today. We'll share it with you. The mainstream media won't touch this. So we have a lot to share. We begin with the latest on health and healing. According to the latest research from two universities, they found that onions and garlic, which are a staple in Puerto Rico kitchens and also around the world, can make a difference in preventing breast cancer. Now, there are other herbs and spices like cilantro and red peppers that also can do a good job with that. And look, you can consume these and probably haven't even been aware, like in a salsa. Cilantro and garlic or an onion are in both of those. But it's the foundation for a lot of rice dishes throughout the world. That's how they get their seasonings. Turmeric is common, of course, in the Far East, Middle East, but garlic all across the world and onion as well. But recent research finds there might be more to this iconic condiment than its rich Puerto Rican character. In a major breakthrough, scientists from the State University of New York at Buffalo and the University of Puerto Rico found that a chemical inside there, one of the phytochemicals called sofrito, S-O-F-R-I-T-O, is linked to a reduction in the risk of breast cancer. In particular, women who consume more than one serving daily had an incredible 67% decrease in breast cancer risk compared to women who never ate it. So again, you don't look for sofrito, you look for garlic and onions because that's where you get it. So it's very powerful. It's an anti-cancer condiment, just like the ingredients in green tea or in ginseng or in ginkgo biloba. So if you can reduce the risk of certain cancers, including those of your lungs, prostate, and stomach, that's all positive. But it really takes hold in reducing risk of breast cancer. So that's what they found. And that's also, I might add that if you want to take another anti-carcinogenic compound, this in onions and garlic, especially in onions, quercetin. Now, there's where you can take quercetin separately, quercetin. Quercetin, quercetin. And that you can buy generally anywhere from 200 to 2,000 milligrams a day. You generally take the same amount of quercetin you take of vitamin C. There's also saponin and allin, A-L-L-I-I-N. Those are also present in garlic and onion, but they also are potent against breast cancer. I've helped probably, I'm going to guess, 10,000 women with breast cancer. Thousands. At one time, we had an afternoon session at the Tri-State Healing Center where we had all breast cancer patients. And you frequently see 20 in a room at the same time. Almost all came with either stage 3 or stage 4 breast cancer. Many had gone through traditional therapies and been told there was nothing more they could do. And, there was a lot that could be done, just not from the orthodox model. And saved a lot of lives. And every one of those, every single patient who had HIV/AIDS, who had any form of Gulfmour syndrome, and also cancer, they were put on a high alum diet, meaning lots of garlic. I would have people eating as much as a quarter cup of garlic a day. And I've mentioned that you can roast a big, let's say a bulb of garlic, elephant garlic is called, and then you crush it up and put olive oil, linseed oil in there, cayenne pepper, and it's delicious. I put raw onion, it's sweet raw onion. You could have that as a snack. Anti-cancer. From the SNDT Women's University in India, published in the Journal of Essential Oil Research, they found that tea tree oil, lemongrass, cinnamon and thyme, that's T-H-Y-M-E, the essential oils of these were good against pathogenic fungi. Now, everywhere in the United States and around the world, people die of antibiotic-resistant bacterial infections. But there's also fungal infections, and especially among people who are immunocompromised, and especially within, let's say, the last year or two, where people suddenly developed a cancer and went downhill very fast. Well, scientists are worried about the possibility of having no effective antifungal agent because there is none at the moment. And because they're developing resistance because we've given too many antibiotics to people in their food and too many prescriptions for antibiotics. And this is why many studies are now being conducted to develop new strategies that involve reliable agents that are non-toxic, and the essential oils derived from medicinal plants are known for their antimicrobial properties. I travel with and always use, especially when I'm around people and who may have infections. I'm not going to avoid being around people because I lecture all over the place all the time and I counsel people. So in between all this, I take my essential oils. And these oils help my body. Wild oregano oil and all the oils that I'm not going to go through my own because each person's have their own, but you should have like 7 different oils. And you blend, put a couple drops in a smoothie, generally with protein. Black cumin seed oil, of course, is the most powerful of all. A little hard to take for some people. And I do not recommend the average person take it, just swig it down, as some people do, because you'll be tasting that 11 o'clock at night if you took it at 7 o'clock in the previous day. But take it in a protein shake. But these things are phenomenally powerful. And it doesn't mean the more you take, the more powerful they are. You don't have to take much of these oils for them to make a difference. So the oils are good. They're considered the hydrophobic secondary metabolites in plants and are multi-component in nature. Now they're good against pathogenic fungi like Aspergillus, Candida, albicans, Cryptococcus, and Fusarium. Now, these fungi are the most common causes of death in immunocompromised people, so people don't always die of the disease like emphysema or cancer. They die of a secondary infection from the failure of their immune system, frequently because of these terrible bacteria that get into the body. So lemongrass, cinnamon, thyme, tea tree oil, they're all good. From Emory University School of Medicine comes a new study, and it's a good one because it shows exercise makes it easier to bounce back from stress. And I mentioned yesterday that one of the ways that we can alleviate stress is just by going for a fast bike ride in hard gear, meaning a resistance, where it's hard to pedal. And you stay pedaling. You don't stop. Don't coast. Or in a gym in high gear, same thing. Or power walk, a race walk, jog. All of those will create endorphins. And the endorphins are the feel-good hormone. And that can help you for about 6 hours. So if you exercise for a half hour in the morning and a half hour after you got home from work, you've got about 12 hours where your brain is helping you to remain psychologically resilient and positive. So that's why it's so important to exercise. And from Florida Atlantic University, according to the American Stroke Association and the American Heart Association, more than 100 million Americans have high blood pressure. Elevated blood pressure, of course, is a major avoidable cause of premature death and morbidity in the United States and worldwide due to primarily an increase in risk of stroke and heart attacks. So elevated blood pressure is the most important major and modifiable risk factor to reduce stroke. In fact, small but sustained reductions in blood pressure reduce risk of stroke and heart attack substantially. So in effect, you have to live a therapeutic lifestyle. What do I mean? Lose weight. Reduce your salt intake. Use lemon and lime juice. It'll give you the same thing. When I bake a potato, I will open it up, and I bake it at lower temperatures, so it takes a little longer, but the alpha-lipoic acid and other nutrients I want are more available. And if you massage the potato in coconut oil, you have a more edible skin. It doesn't burn it. And then if you take a knife and you cut four deep holes the whole length of the potato, then it's just cooking. The water inside evaporates, so you get a nice, fluffy, evenly cooked potato. Otherwise, I'm sure you've all done this. You cut into a potato and it's hard. Maybe the top little piece is not, but the rest is. It wasn't evenly cooked. So that's how you get a more even cooking. By the way, the same thing works on squash and sweet potatoes. And then you open it up and you put some garlic in there and raw onions, both of which will drop your blood pressure down. And then you squirt lemon juice and it tastes just like salt. So you can put pepper. Pepper, by the way, is a very good ingredient. And that way you can have something you like, but it'll be healthy. This was published in Medical Hypothesis. So simple information that can make a difference. And also, Texas A&M University found that turmeric, T-U-M-E-R-I-C, if they had a turmeric-based drug, it eases eye inflammation in dogs. So a therapeutic derived from turmeric shows promise in decreasing ocular inflammation in dogs who have that condition. Uveitis, U-V-E-I-T-I-S, that's a common condition in dogs, even in humans, and it can have many causes, often occurring secondary to infectious diseases, cancer, and autoimmune diseases. And now they've come up with this way to help prevent cataract surgery in dogs. This was published in Science Advances, so just look for medications for the eyes with turmeric based in it. And also Virginia Tech University says, we found out how olive oil helps you lose weight. And the results, which were published in the peer-reviewed journal Biochemistry, could help diabetics prevent the advances of diabetic onset disease, including heart disease and cancer. And they found that it was something I've already told you about on this program, the olive leaves. You have a particular biochemical reaction when the olive leaf is there, but also the olives are there. It has anti-diabetic functions, and it is called O-L-E-U-R-O-P-E-I-N. Very simple. And it promotes glucose-stimulating insulin secretion in your beta cells. So, one more reason to have your olive leaf extract and olive oil. They both have it. All right? Good cardiovascular health benefits. And by the way, anytime I'm giving the animals I oversee at the animal sanctuary where I live on the ranch, I make sure they get lots of olive oil each day, extra virgin organic olive oil every day, at least a teaspoon per animal. Makes all the difference in the world. And you just put it on something they like to eat, and they'll gobble it up. And exercise can make your cells healthier and promoting a longer life. University of Virginia did this study. So whether your muscles are healthy or not really determines whether the entire body is healthy or not. So for those people who are not exercising and think they can take some vitamins and be healthy, doesn't work. You eat a good diet, but you don't exercise, doesn't work. You've got to exercise. That is the big deal because exercise stresses the mitochondria. Oh, and what I mean by that is that just one bout of a moderate to intense exercise acts as a stress test on the mitochondria in the muscles. And this stress test induced by aerobic exercise triggers a process called mitophagy, where the muscle disposes of the damaged or dysfunctional mitochondria, gets rid of them, cleans house, making the muscle healthier. So I would compare exercise-induced mitophagy to a state vehicle inspection that removes damaged cars from the streets. You've got to exercise. It removes damaged mitochondria in your skeletal muscle. So if you're not going to exercise, you're not going to be strong. You need these. It removes the mitochondrial clunkers. So that's the latest on health and healing. We're 17 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, I'm going to share a comment, and then I'm going to take a call from the from our talkback, not to talkback line, but I'm going to give you something to call in. I'm going to take one of the people who called in, listened to the program, and left a message on our voicemail. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. And by the way, before I went on the air today, I Googled conservative radio, and there's Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and all the people. And then I Googled liberal radio and all the people who have programs that almost exclusively talk about the liberal philosophy. And they were almost even, around 165 to 170 million search results. And then I Googled progressive radio. Whoa, whoa, whoa. 230 million. Now compare that to 15 years ago when you didn't have 1,000 people. So just remember, when you think that, well, you got to listen to CNBC or CNN or read the New York Times or watch Fox, you don't. You don't. And a lot of people worldwide, without any advertising whatsoever, no interviews, no ads, nothing. And we're the fastest growing media phenomena in the world. Okay? So share it with friends. Now, I want to share some thoughts with you. And then I'd like for you to call in and share your thoughts with the audience. This is part one. Part two, the more philosophical, is tomorrow. But let me just start by saying that what happens when we don't stop and look at the outcome, likely outcome, or absolute outcome of our choices? And then we get to a destination. And then we turn around and look at the trail we just followed. Is it the trail we should have? Are these the choices we should have made? Do we have many of those moments where we missed something? We should have been there. We should have shown up. We should have taken advantage. We didn't. We gave an excuse. There's two movies that this came to mind with. One was Splendor in the Grass, Tennessee Williams' book, and I think it was Natalie Wood and Warren Beatty starred in it, about the Depression era, and he came from a wealthy family. His father lost it all, committed suicide, and she lost the capacity to communicate, was put into a mental institution. But at the point is, at the end of the movie, she came to see, can they rekindle this? But he was married, had a little kid. And in that moment where she's looking in his eyes, he's looking at hers, you know that there's an attraction. You know that there is still a connection, because they had a very nice connection during the film. You see that. But it couldn't be any longer. Time had moved on. Circumstances change. We grow. What we liked at one time today is no longer what we like. What we do, how we spend our times, and the older we get, the more inculcated we become, the more we resist change of any type. The other film was The Way We Were, Barbara Streisand and Robert Redford. The very end, she's the social activist out on the corner handing out the anti-war flyers, and he is married to someone, and she sees him in a car, and they get together in the street. And in that second, you think of all that could have happened if they made their relationship, when it was available, a priority. They didn't. As a result, now they have a memory of what if. Well, how many times in life do we get up and we think, what if? What if I'd have made a different decision? What if I would have eaten the good food? I'm counseling a buddy of mine who his entire life, and I've known him a long time, he's never made a single healthy choice. Now he's suffering the consequences. And we had a conversation, he had that irony of, you know, if I'd have just, you know, and I was mocking and everybody was laughing at you, you know, I said, that's fine. But we're all sick and you're not. I said, well, that's something that you can start today to learn so you don't keep repeating these mistakes, because we repeat these mistakes ad nauseum. So right now, if you ask the average person, what are you concerned about? Health is not a top priority. Not being able to be insured if you get sick is their priority. But are they willing to change? Absolutely, positively, nobody changes. All right? Then, well, what about starting an exercise program? Nope, not going to do that either, unless you are already exercising, unless you were already healthy. And then what about changing my body politics? What about looking at a different way to seek a different outcome that's not just platitudes and promises, but actually doing something? After all, the only reason, in my personal opinion, that Donald Trump, who shouldn't be elected to anything, let alone dog catcher, he is a functional illiterate. We all know that. That's not being mean to him. That's just being honest, because I know his whole history. And he didn't hide anything. All you had to do is go back and look at his life. Look at his life from the very beginning, and I know his whole life. It's one megalomaniac, stupid choice after another. What caused him to be president was not his uniqueness. It was the lack of authenticity in honoring the working class person's life to give them what they needed. Everybody abandoned them. In West Virginia and Kentucky and Illinois, the factories closed. All of your rich, wealthy, upscale liberals and conservatives, everybody got on the money train, and they abandoned the middle class. Today, they have abandoned the middle class. So it was a vote out of anger, out of not being able to take it anymore, not wanting another Clinton or Obama, another person to come and lie to them. That's all they've ever been done is lie to them. And all the people now are just liars. You would have to be a complete idiot to believe any politician today. And that's why I don't. But that's me. You could have a different position. You can be, you know, believing in Rush Limbaugh. He's, you know, your choice, and that's your business. I don't care. But there's a consequence for all of us when the wrong people are in power. And that's why we have so many independents today and growing. But these are choices. So what happens when we should have made a different choice? I should have done it, and I didn't. So let me tell you what we're not doing today. Not at all. Zero. Not a scintilla of effort at any level. Not, you know, white supremacy or white entitlement or that you know, that racism, that's not the number one priority, and it shouldn't be made that. It's important to deal with any form of prejudice and injustice, yes, but not when there's a tsunami that's 3,000 feet high coming at you. But we don't think deeply. We react emotionally. We have no perspective for deeper thought. We're conditioned robots. If tomorrow there's a COVID-19 vaccine, 70% of Americans will roll up their arm, even if it was told them, we're going to have control over your body, we're going to take away your cash, we're going to put an antenna that can kill you and disrupt your life. They'd say, okay, okay. And so that's what we are today, a nation that people just don't give a damn. I'll get to that tomorrow. I've written this morning a whole deep essay on this. But the reality is we're not paying attention to the number one priority in the world today. There should be no priority greater than this. Not no COVID, nothing. Global warming. Now, I'm going to give you facts from the last 10 days, okay? And tell me what you've done about it. All right. Yale University, climate change is causing more rapid intensification of Atlantic hurricanes, meaning you're going to get hit if you live in Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Florida, and South Carolina, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina. You're going to start getting hit with 4 and 5 categories and even a category 6. When the category 5 hits Florida and goes from coast to coast, let's say from Miami, Homestead, over to Fort Myers, you're going to have 10 million people damaged, their homes, insurance won't cover it, they're leaving the state. And then the entire state collapses because it's all based upon the idea of people paying high real estate taxes. And yet the science is there absolutely positively showing you're going to get body slammed again and again and again. Is anyone moving? Nope. Anyone saying anything? Nope. Any effort? No, not at all. Why should we? We have football this weekend, more important. Oregon wildfires. Do you know in the last 24 hours, Oregon wildfires destroyed in its entirety, completely decimated, wiped them out, 5 separate towns. It's never happened in American history that 5 complete towns, nothing was left standing, people were killed. Not, you know, wouldn't see much of it in the news. There was no discussion about, well, why weren't these people, why did they live there? What kind of precautions? Did we clear zones around? Did we put sprinklers, commercial sprinklers, 4-inch sprinklers that I've suggested around everyone's area where they live to soak the, no, nothing, zero, zip. That's in Oregon. Did you see this morning the photograph? I saw it on the BBC, the photograph of an entire community, upscale community in Phoenix that was just burned to the ground. We're not talking about a few homes or old homes or space. We're talking about a whole community, a gated community. Every single home, I'm guessing it could be off, I'm guessing 100 homes more or less. In just one community, every single home burned to a crisp. Nothing left. Did you hear about it? No. Why would you? No. The Earth lost 30 trillion tons of ice in under 30 years, and scientists are, quote, now they're stunned, quote, by landmark study, EcoWatch. Wildfires burning out of control in Vancouver Island, Ecological Reserve. How many fires are in Brazil today? 63,000 fires are in Brazil today. How many of those fires or the causes of them were shown on television? How about none? Stories, none. Russia's permafrost is melting, Berlin News. And how big is the fire? We've now passed 2,300,000 acres burned in California. To give you an idea, this time last year, in the same period of time, from January till now, there was about 700,000 acres burned. Now we're 2.3 million, and you've got hundreds of fires in California. Most are not in control. 82,000 burned in overnight. And now thousands of homes. What's the discussion on it? Oh, the discussion is on the news. Look how orange the smoke is over San Francisco. People have to stay indoors. How about, should we even be living on the West Coast? Anywhere on the West Coast? The answer is no. The San Andreas Fault, another fault, the perpetual drought, the lack of water, drying up of water resource. No, but we won't talk about those things. Again, because tonight there's two more football games. The Atlantic is heating, and we're now looking at worst-case scenario, Climate News Network. When the Atlantic heats, you're going to have worse storms. The Antarctica, 60% of ice sheets at risk of fracture, and that could mean overnight when they fracture and they're no longer a part of land and they're part of the body of water, you could have multiple meters of rising water, and that means not only would that just devastate about 65 million Americans, not a single thing is being done about it. California fires, two blazes among the state's largest ever, New York Times today. Fires have now burned record 2,300,000 acres in California, common dreams. Greenland's ice sheet lost a record 1 million tons of ice per 60 seconds every second of the day for 12 months. Again, 1 million tons of water going into the Atlantic per minute. Not a word. Wildfire burning out of control in Vancouver Island. Canary in the coal mine. Greenland ice has shrunk beyond return. Reuters. Extreme weather just devastated 10 million acres in the Midwest. Did you know about 10 million acres in America's Midwest? Farm belt destroyed? Nope. Death Valley indoors, potentially record-breaking 130 degrees Fahrenheit. Hurricane Laura jumped from Category 1 to 4 in a day. Unless we change course, the U.S. agricultural system could collapse, The Guardian. Now, that's just in the last 10 days. I did not discuss what's happening around the world. Two typhoons hit Japan over the last week, back-to-back. Floods killing people in India, Bangladesh. I'm just talking about the United States. Oh, and by the way, we imagine having 63,000 fires in Brazil and losing 2.3 million acres in California. Guess how much has been lost in the Russian boreal forest? 73 million acres. Think about that. Now, the state's most vulnerable wildfires, and these are all official statistics, number one in America, California. So why in the hell are 40 million people living there? Nevada, Oregon, Oklahoma, Idaho, Texas, Colorado, Utah, Washington State, and Alaska. So if they're most vulnerable to wildfires and we're now in a perpetual drought on the West Coast, would it be reasonable to live there? No. The safest places from wildfires, Delaware, Rhode Island, Vermont, Illinois, New Hampshire. 8 states running out of water, non-sustainable, no reason to move there. Oregon, Washington State, California, Nevada, Idaho, Montana, Utah, and South Carolina. The 10 cities in America running out of water, Los Angeles, Houston, Phoenix, San Antonio, San Francisco, Fort Worth, Las Vegas, Tucson, Atlanta, and Orlando. We're not talking about going through a little blip. We're talking about being forever out of water, like Cape Town is out of water, the fifth largest city in India, out of water. I'll deal with those. Well, let me deal with them now. If you were to say, where should I move around the world? Well, Cape Town would be the worst place to move to. But guess what is second? With 22 million people living in the Metroplex and about 8.3 million, about the same size as Manhattan, living in Mexico City. Mexico City, yeah, out of water. Jakarta, Indonesia. Cairo. Sao Paulo. Brazil. Beijing. China. Chennai in India. Los Angeles. Dhaka, Bangladesh. Bangalore, India. And Melbourne, Australia. Now, when I say they're running out of water, I mean forever running out of water. Anything being done? Nothing. Some thoughts about maybe we should desalinate. Well, that's a major polluter, and ironic, that contributes to global warming, which in turn contributes to more fires running out of water. So what do you believe should be done about it? And why aren't we doing anything about it? Anything. Nothing. Zero. Zip. Why is that not a priority? Why does that not matter? Why does your life not matter? Why does the life of the planet not matter? Why do all the species that are going extinct at 250 species per 24 hours, why does that not matter? Why does the food for over 2 billion people on the earth not matter? Tell me that. My talkback number is 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. I'll give you my thoughts tomorrow, not today. Now, while you're thinking about what you'd like to ask or say, I'm going to play one. We only have time today, Jonathan, for one clip, so put on one person's voicemail.
Hi, this is Joan from Astoria. I would like to leave a message for Gary. First of all, thank you for your marvelous program, and I'd like to leave a comment that you were requesting from listeners. Do we think New York will make a comeback? I'm a lifelong New Yorker and tend to stay here for the rest of my life because I don't give up easily. And yes, I do think that New York can make a comeback, but I do think that we have to work together to get it that way. And I have some suggestions for how New York should come back. The way the presidential candidates started campaigning a year or 2 years in advance, I think we should get some really decent, good mayoral candidates starting to campaign right now for the following things. One would be a safe environment so people feel that they don't have to be afraid, that they don't have to move out of New York because it's unsafe. I remember the days when New York was unsafe. And it was turned around, and it can be turned around again. And number two, I agree that rents should be controlled on all apartments. I think everybody should be rent stabilized to whatever degree fits that type of building. Keep the ones that we have regulated now, but put all of them under some type of moderate control so people can feel they can actually afford to live here, without worrying that next year the rent will go up so high they won't be able to afford it. Then I think that stores should push to have offers of products that are cheaper in the store than online, because when products are cheaper online, they're destroying their own brick-and-mortar business. So we have to have some sale days for things that are on sale in the stores cheaper than online. Thanks very much, Gary. Keep up the good work.
Okay, some very important points. Thank you very much for calling and leaving that message. This will take longer than we have today, but I will share this with you. Stop and look at why do you live in New York? I've lived in New York for 53 years. I love the city with all of its diversity, with all of its different cultural input, the uniqueness of the things that we have available, the opera, the ballet, the Broadway, off-Broadway, the Poets' Corner, all the places where you can go and find something interesting, unique, and challenging. Now look at the New York we have today. We have a different New York. The COVID-19 virus has been politicized and then weaponized. You've heard all the shows I've done. I've got more to do on this. The evidence is supporting our position that there's good drugs to use, like hydroxychloroquine with zinc and isoniazid, but they're not going to use it. That shows you how they politicize this. So we could have something now that could save lives and prevent disease. They won't use it because the people who are the manufacturers of the new drugs and vaccines, they want everything to go to them because they're attached to them, like Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci and Donald Trump. But look at a restaurant. Yesterday it was announced that, okay, they're going to open up restaurants, but only 25% seating. Now, I've had three very successful restaurants, including the first gourmet vegan restaurant in American history, The Fertile Earth. And I'm sure many of you over the 10 years it was open who are listening today, I'm sure there are people who ate there. Great gourmet meal, all organic. All the vegetables were grown up at the Fertile Earth farm, brought in every day. Everything was fresh made. Wonderful environment. But I had to have three seatings just to break even. My rent was all of $300 a month. That was 1970. Now, today, you have to have at least two full seatings in order to break even. Your third seating, let's say your four to six seating, that's your older people, retired people, and you give them a special discount. They come in for the early bird specials. Then your earlier people who are going out for the evening and want to get a bite to eat, that's your 6 to 8 o'clock group. Then your main dining is going to come in Manhattan between 8 and 11 o'clock. You have 25% seating. You're not going to stay open. You'll go bankrupt. It is not possible to stay open unless you're dealing with very cheap food, finger food or fast food, because any dining, you have a lot of expenses. Remember, when it's snowing out or bad out, you still have to have your staff and all your food. You take a big risk. On top of that, the landlords are charging you for their property tax. So if you want to get the businesses back in New York, you must stop the very corrupt city council and the mayor from aligning, as they have historically, with an iron grip held by the landlords. The landlords' grip must be broken. Now, some are going to go bankrupt, and they deserve it, because they've used their building that they own like an ATM machine, like many people during the 2000s, they used the increased value in their house. They bought the house for $100,000. It's now worth $200,000. Oh, I'll take out an equity loan on it. Okay, I got it. $100,000 in my pocket. Well, friend, you got a $200,000 debt you owe. What if the market goes, it's not going to go down, but it can go down. No, it won't go down. It went down. A friend of mine's a school teacher, owned 6 houses during this buy 'em and flip 'em stage. He didn't get out. He went broke. But what happens is that we are fetished to the max on maximizing market capitalization. So what happens then is the landlord takes out a mortgage against the growth of income in the building. The bank gives it to him, and then he spends it on whatever he wants. And now the empty apartments, empty storefronts, and they thought, well, this will turn around. It didn't. It's not going to for quite some time for two reasons. First, a lot of corporations thinking, wow, why should I go back and be paying that high rent, $250 a square foot, when people can work from their homes and that costs us nothing and they can do just as well at home? So now they're getting rid of all these high-end rents, unless they need a trophy office someplace on Park Avenue or Fifth Avenue to do their business. And some do, but a lot of people don't. Go through the garment industry if you want to see an awful lot of empty spaces. And then people came along and says, we've got a rent-a-day office. And that's the biggest, they're the biggest landlords in New York City now. You go in, you pay them about $800 for a desk for a month. It could go up or down. But for 1 month in that room, you have a desk. Now, if you get a telephone, it's extra, but you got a desk, and that's a mailing address. So a lot of people, especially people didn't have big corporations, lawyers, they would do that. Now those people are working from home. So you see, you've got to bring people back into an environment when the environment itself has changed. And then what you see, especially on the Upper West Side where I've lived, is you see principally now wealthy individuals, successful individuals with families moving out. Many are moving up the Hudson, moving to the suburbs. The ultra-rich are moving out to Long Island and buying up homes for their family and friends and living in the mega mansions. The uber-rich are moving to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. That's one of their destinations, and also up into Colorado. So they're moving out. They can afford to come back. They may still own an apartment, but many are giving up their apartments because they don't like what has happened. However, as much as we see a decimation, and I believe it'll be about 50% of all restaurants will be closed permanently, that means there's no reason for those people who worked in the restaurants to come back in. So the opera is not going to open because the opera and movie theaters and everything else, it's open. I went to a movie for the first time in 9 months the other night. I saw a stupid movie behind, oh God, what a movie. If you thought Inception was nuts, this new movie, The Tenet, is more so. In any case, I was the only person in the movie theater. And on a Sunday evening at 8 o'clock. And I asked the usher, I said, this is where it's been all week, because you have separate seating. So if you take three seats away for one seat to sit, you're not going to be able to fill it with enough seats to keep this going. So you're going to see major bankruptcies in the theater. You'll see more people watching movies from home. The way we dine will change. So people will try to make a comeback. It's not going to work. But that's the bad news. The good news is that with the collapse of the real estate market in the commercial market, almost 50%, and the collapse of the retail market, homes abandoned all over the city, 67,000 empty apartments, you'll see working class people coming back into the city because they can afford to. And that will rejuvenate the city, and that will rejuvenate new businesses, and that will rejuvenate over a period of at least 5 years. It will take little restaurants opening up, but with different leases. And if all the people join together, get rid of the landlord's property tax that is put on to the tenant, make the landlord pay for his own property tax, and then don't have personal guarantees. A personal guarantee on a lease means that if you go bankrupt, the landlord can go after for the length of your lease. Let's say you're in a 10-year lease and you go bankrupt in 5 years. They can go after your personal possessions, your bank accounts, your savings, your pension, and they will. They're ruthless, ruthless people. It's like they have no heart. That's good news. They can't die of a heart attack. But man, are they bad to the bone. There are exceptions, but that's the majority. So there's got to be fundamental changes. Now, when that happens, when there are fundamental changes, when changes is forced, then it'll be affordable. And yes, there should be a cap on how much rents can be in buildings. There should be rent control reestablished. And then the city, over a period of time, will come back. New York is not dead. It is injured. It is not mortally wounded. It will recover. But another class of people will come back because it classed out of the city people who were just working people. The working middle class were thrown out. And there was a time when the working middle class represented the heart and soul of New York City. And today, they can't afford to live there. They can't afford to even come. One night going to Broadway show, having dinner, you're out $300. Who can afford that? So thank you for your call. Now, let me just see. John, did we have anyone call in to share their points of view? James from New York, your turn.
Good afternoon, Gary. Gary,
hi.
I've been in the city for almost my whole life, and the other day I was on the bus, and I came up 3rd Avenue. I must have counted about 110 moving vans on both sides of the street of 3rd Avenue going northbound. And I couldn't believe these condominiums that they recently built are empty. And I couldn't believe that people that own these buildings right now are ready to put them up for sale or whatever because nobody's moving out of the city, not moving in. And since the city now is at a point of cutting a lot of programs in the schools, people have lost their jobs. And the issue is the economy, taxes, has really stripped the city. And I think in what you're saying, Gary, is the tip of that berg. And I think the president is not giving any more money to the cities anymore. So
okay, let's focus on what you just said. You've made several good points. Thank you. Do you remember Abe Beame taking over as mayor back in around 1970? Do you remember how bad the city was, how dangerous it was, how lacking in basic services like repairing potholes? And in the winter when snow came, the streets that got the snow removal and all the other streets in the boroughs didn't? Well, that's what we're dealing with and about to get a lot worse now. So you're going to see a lot worse happen in the city over the next 12 to 24 months because a lot of those people who built those big towers for very high rent or sales, $2,500 a square foot, and you got a 3,000 square foot apartment, you're dealing in $2 to $3 million for an inexpensive place. It's absurd. It's obscene. There's a concept. It is called hedonic concepts, meaning hedonism, which is a principle of bringing pleasure into your life. On the one end of the scale, the pleasure could be the joy and happiness of being with people you love, having a wonderful partner. You just, your heart melts every time you look at them because you feel so blessed to have this sacred soul in your life. To have a pet, a dog, a cat that you love, that loves you. That's at the one scale of hedonic philosophy. But today, nothing on that scale registers. Everything took a quantum leap to the hedonistic part of hedonic belief, meaning excessive exploitation, a pleasure to it's not only not pleasure anymore, it is just performance of money and possessions to show your significance. Everything has to be bigger and better, and our schools have declined in quality of education. The schools in the 1950s and 60s in New York City were far better than the schools today, forgetting the private schools and their obscene wealth to get people in. And it's dumbed down, and cheating is rampant. So what you will have is, for a period of time, it will seem like everything is collapsing. It is not. It is being repurposed. So think of New York as being repurposed. Los Angeles will go through something completely different because it never had the culture, had some culture, but never had this. And San Francisco, even worse. But New York will be reborn again with people who can afford to live here and bring those qualities that they desire and are important to them back into the city. But you have to completely overturn everything, this kind of mayor that we have and city council and the governor. You got to wash out all that unfortunately, that incontinent intellectual stain that became the diaper of New York. And that's what we've become. Obsessive wealth, obsessive greed, obsessive corruption, obsessive power mongering. And the average person was just, they were crushed by it. So their days are over and a new day is beginning. But recovering from any disease takes time, and there will be time, but there is going to be a happy future for New York. Thank you for your call. I'm going to close out with this. I got a call yesterday from a friend who says, you know, Gary, don't you think we need violence? You know, I mean, look, you know, I don't think it's really violent when you do something like burn down a bit. I said, hold on a second. Are you aware of how many movements have been nonviolent and the results? Gandhi's salt movement in 1930, the 1913 suffrage parade, the 1960s, the Delano Grape March and 25-day hunger strike, change legislation on abuse of farm workers, the Montgomery bus boycott, the Estonia Singing Revolution in 1988 with 100,000 Estonians protesting Soviet rule, the 1935 Martin Luther King March on Washington, the Flint sit-in in 1935, 135,000 strikers in 35 cities. It was nonviolent. The 1968 Martin Luther King Wash on Washington, nonviolent. Standing Rock, North Dakota, against the pipeline, nonviolent. The violence was on the other side, always is. Cochabamba, water war, Oscar Oliveira's protests against Bechtel and Bolivian government corruption against water privatization, charging people for water who were poor. It was nonviolent. The 1973 Thailand peace protests of students and Buddhist monks to overthrow military junta, nonviolent. The 1973 sitters in the New Zealand area protesting deforestation. The government stopped all logging operations. The Opter protests, students in Yugoslavia contributed to overthrowing Milosevic. A Jasmine revolution in Tunisia overthrew President Ben Ali. Aung San Suu Kyi's 1988 demonstrations eventually leading to her victory in Burma. The Philippines' People Power Revolution that overthrew Marcos' regime. And Havel's Velvet Revolution in Czechoslovakia. And, of course, a lot of them failed. A lot of them succeeded. There's a longer list I could share with you, but stay nonviolent and protest what you need to. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.